Good evening, Tim. Well, the gadget guide this week comes from Redgate, which is a software company up on the north side of Cambridge, just on the Cambridge Business Park. And they've been doing an Internet of Things Down Tools Week. So we've spoken about the Internet of Things a little bit in the past. And so this week I decided to actually go out to Redgate and speak to some of the teams that have been working on these projects and see what they've been up to. So first up, I caught up with Marine Barbaroux.
Thank you, Rob. Yes, I'm head of user experience indeed.
And you were one of the driving forces behind Internet of Things Down Tools Week. So first of all, just explain briefly, if you could, what Down Tools Week means.
So Down Tools Week is a week within Redgate, which we used to actually develop things that we wouldn't normally develop. So it was based a little bit on the principle of the 20% time of Google. I don't know if you're aware of it, but it's this idea that Google let their employees spend 20% of their time to do things that are not directly related to their job, with the idea that then the employees will create stuff that can innovate within Google, that sort of things. And it's the same for us.
So basically, everyone in the company or everyone in development just gets to spend a week doing whatever they want?
So that's pretty much it. So mainly is development, traditionally, simply because we've got other functions where, basically you can't stop the business for an entire week. But so customer support, for instance, or sales and representatives and all of those jobs carry on working, but they can be pulled in projects led by development in general. And they do pretty much, yes, whatever they want. Although recently we're trying to kind of sometimes provide themes for those teams to kind of develop efforts in a given direction that is maybe more interesting.
So it's not just an excuse for everyone to go down the pub?
Not at all. Actually, often you'd see people working more in longer hours during that week because we've got a very finite time frame. So if you want to do something, if you want to achieve it by the deadline, then you tend to be in early and stay a bit late.
Okay, so this week it was Internet of Things. What is the Internet of Things? We've talked about it on the Gadget Guide a little bit in the past, but what does it mean in the context of Redgate?
That's funny. I should have listened to the Gadget show then. Often Internet of Things is referred crudely as, fridges speaking or ordering your food. That's not what it is. The idea is that the object in your everyday life will eventually be connected to the internet, and being able to interact between themselves or within some other storage in the cloud, or being able to kind of actually being also used by anyone else because it's stored somewhere globally. So there's lots of things there that can be done. So the reason why it's interesting, or the reason why we've used it as a themes for Redgate eventually, is because of that, there's a lot of data being generated, and clearly working with data is what Redgate does.
Perfect. So I'm going to go and grab some of the people that have actually been working on these projects in a moment. Did you have a favourite out of all the projects that happened during the week?
No, that you can't ask me that. I mean, I won't answer to this. Of course, I could say my project was one of the best. It was my favourite.
What was your project?
It wasn't entirely mine, but I worked on a project where we had our coffee machines to tweet and to basically have personas and behaviors, so they would inform us when they are free, when they are busy, when is the best time to have a coffee, which sort of coffee is best to have, etc.
Do you know how many followers they have on Twitter so far?
No, I don't know, I'm afraid. I know they have, last time I looked, they had about 50.
That's not bad for a coffee machine. I remember the one of the first internet webcams was a coffee machine, so maybe it's just going back to olden times.
Maybe, yes. I know we wanted to, we have our CEO, Niels, has a chair that tweets as well, so perhaps we can just introduce the chair and the coffee machines.
Tweeting office furniture. Marine, thanks very much for your time. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Have a good evening too.
So I'm joined by Phil Ways. Phil's one of the developers here at Redgate. Phil, you actually went all the way to robotics for your Down Tools Week project. Just tell us a little bit about what it was.
Yeah, so I took a Raspberry Pi and used that as the underlying computer, and then built a really simple robotics platform. So grabbed a couple of motors off eBay and then 3D printed some wheels and stuck that and a Raspberry Pi camera and a few other bits we bought off eBay. I made a little kind of robot that's maybe about 8 inches, 8 inches across, which you can sort of drive around the office. And so the way you sort of built it was so you could control it from a mobile phone. So we've got a mobile phone, and that's got a little app on it, and so you can sort of drag your finger forward, and the robot drives forward, and you can drag your finger back, and the robot drives backwards, and you can turn left and turn right. But the thing that we then kind of thought would be a bit interesting is that what happens if you've got like two people on the app at the same time? And so we thought, I know, Twitch plays Pokemon. That's a thing, right? And so what happens now is if you've got more than one person on this app at the same time, the robot chooses what to do based on the kind of majority vote of all the people involved.
So hang on, we've got a 3D printed Raspberry Pi powered mobile phone app powered democratic robot. This is sort of ticking just about every subject that we've ever talked about on the Gadget Guide. I'm impressed, Phil.
Yeah, it's also hyper local for some reason I can't quite recall, but yeah, it's a true piece of all of the things you could possibly do. It was originally controlled by tilting your mobile phone, but I showed this design to one of our UX designers, and he was like, no, that's a really bad idea. So it's now got a more traditional kind of joystick-style control, but still on the touch of your phone.
So when you did the presentation, you had a bit of a challenge to drive around a flagpole. How did that work out for you?
Yeah, so I thought in order to demonstrate this, obviously that we got this thing and then plonked it down on a table that must have been sort of a normal kind of approximately dining table size table, and then we had a little start position, an obstacle to drive around in the middle of the table, which was a plant I stole off someone's desk, a pole around the end, and so the idea was to go out of this the starting blocks, drive around the plant, drive to the other end of the table and drive back again, and of course all the people who were watching the kind of the presentations, there must have been about 50 or 100 people, would then like collectively drive this robot. We had 5 minutes for the presentation. After about 40 seconds, it had been driven off the edge. So we did a reset. I'll give everyone another go. And then another 20 or 30 seconds later, said robot had been driven onto the floor and had broken itself into pieces.
So driving by committee, not necessarily the optimal way of doing it.
Yeah, so committees are maybe good for some things, but writing English and driving robots is probably not one of those.
Right, I've wandered over and joined Simon Elliston Ball, who I think you're a head of big data here at Redgate, aren't you?
I am, yes. Yep.
And you've been trying to keep the office pot plants alive. Do you want to just tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay, so a little while ago, we all came into work and found that we got a new pot plant on our desk. So wandering around the office, we've now got an awful lot of dead pot plants.
Are you saying that software engineers aren't the best people at keeping pot plants alive?
Well, we figured that, they may not look at their plant as often as their screen. So what we were trying to do was solve that problem and start to make their plant watering a little more tech-friendly.
So hang on, is this we've talked about fridges emailing you. Is this now your pot plants emailing you?
Absolutely, yep.
How did that work out for you? How do you go about making a pot plant email you?
Well, we played around with all sorts of new sensors and different Internet of Things technologies, and we were producing lots of little things with little Arduino boards and wires stuck into pot plants. And we went out and bought some basil plants because they're very easy to kill. It turned out that by the end of the week, what we'd managed to do was realize that software engineers are way better at concentrating on all the wires and tech than they are on actually keeping a plant alive. So we just killed more plants.
So hang on, no animals were harmed in this Down Tools Week, but how many plants bit the dust?
Well, we may have lost a couple of basil plants.
I'm sure the canteen have got some more. Obviously we're mostly from a software development background. Yeah, did you find some challenges when it came to actually moving into the physical world of hardware?
Oh, absolutely. For one thing, we realize that you have to be way more organized around your desk when you're dealing with physical hardware. The number of cables lying about all over the place became positive hazard to the software developer's coffee mug. The other thing we found was that actually using the kind of data you get off these sort of sensors is way dirtier than the kind of nice things that we're used to coming out of software and databases, which we work with all the time. You know, we were getting horrible, filthy data and having to produce all sorts of, you know, signal processing and algorithms and all kinds of things on top of that data to actually make it make sense and turn it into something useful.
So do you reckon that the plants are going to be healthier and happier from now on in the Redgate office, or is it back to the usual droopy leaves?
Well, sadly, we didn't quite get a product-ready solution in the course of a week. But we do have a number of plants currently still under monitoring, and they seem to be thriving. We've also instituted what looks like something of a greenhouse around my desk. So we certainly have a lot more healthy plants in the office. And, a number of us have also taken the tech home as well, and busy wiring up all of our pot plants at home too. So I think, all in all, it's been quite successful, and we've got a lot more. We've certainly got a lot more electricity going through our plants, and hopefully that'll lead to more water as well.
Yeah, that I'm not sure that sounds like a good idea, but let's go with it anyway. Simon, thanks very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Right, David, you're one of our product managers at Redgate, and you've actually turned your hand to some both hardware and software this week. I loved the title of your presentation. It was just for kids, you know.
Yeah, well, it's so scary, huh? Letting product management do these things. So I was trying to make a little toy for my daughter, who's 7 years old. I think there's something that's like really tangible about something you can hold in your hands and play with, rather than just sort of playing games on an iPad or something like that. And I was intrigued whether, you know, with really limited ability, both in coding and in building hardware, whether I could come up with something that she'd actually enjoy playing and that she could fathom out.
So what is it that you actually ended up with? It looks really cool. It's sort of, you know, red with a load of buttons on the front. What does it do?
So there are 16 buttons. It's a 4x4 grid.
Yeah.
And each one's got a little LED underneath. So the first game that I tried writing for it was just a little game of Simon Says. So one of the buttons lights up, and then it goes out, and you have to press it. And then once you've done that, that same button lights up, and then the next one does, and so on, building up a sort of a longer sequence. And I was interested in whether this was obvious enough, what the game was to her, that she would be able to work that out. And she could, which was great.
So no, you know, didn't have to write any instruction booklets or anything like that?
No. You know, I had this idea of leaving something in her room that was slightly mysterious object, you know, and that when she thought she'd solved it, she could give it back to me, and I would change the game and put a new one on it. And in fact, that's what I've been doing after Down Tools a Week with her, you know, as the days have gone on.
And that's the beauty of it, isn't it? Yeah, because you've built it, you can make it more challenging, more exciting. Are you looking to go into games development now after your successes?
Well, so I don't think it's quite good enough that I'm going to give up my job. But yeah, it's a lovely thing, and it becomes another way of sort of communicating with, having a conversation, you know, that that each time she's able to solve a particular puzzle, I do have the ability to take it and make the puzzle more difficult or change the rules a little bit, or, you know, and then see if that's enough that she can, you know, get through the challenge still.
So, yeah, you said you came to this without a lot of experience. How easy is it if someone listening to this wanted to go out and actually start, you know, maybe making a game for their kids or something like that? How easy is it for them to get into this?
So, I mean, I guess as with all things, the internet helps tremendously now. The tutorials that are out there are fantastic, and there's a lot of information to help you get started. I think the other thing, so I do have a bit of a background in programming, and what really surprised me was how little about the hardware I actually needed to know. You know, hardware previously was a scary thing for me, you know, something that I avoided having to have too much to deal with. But actually, it felt like the kind of coding that I've been doing for, you know, a good chunk of my career now. So I found it much easier than I'd expected to.
And do you think that's something that's got easier sort of in recent years? We've obviously seen a whole load of popularity of the Raspberry Pi, and you use the Arduino, which is, you know, smaller and lighter and cheaper. Is hardware something that's now easier for people to get into than ever before?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it strikes me as there are a whole lot of technologies that sort of roll around, like desktop publishing or making your own music or things like that, where the ability to do things was once just in, you know, in the provision of people with access to really great equipment and great expertise. And now, you know, everyday people can come and do these things and make things. And that's been a big change for me. You know, thinking back at some of my hardware friends previously, they lived in a different world. And now these worlds are all kind of, you know, colliding a bit more. And it's great fun.
So if you wanted to go out and buy the hardware that you needed for this, is it expensive? You know, how much did this toy actually come in at?
Oh, that's a good question. I think probably about £30 for all the bits that I bought.
And that includes everything you needed to program it and to build it up and everything like that?
Yep, so that was a little Arduino board, the button board and the LEDs. The 3D box I printed at the company I work for at Redgate, so that kind of came free. The software to actually is all open source and free to download.
So it really is, it's very, very easy to get started on this sort of thing.
Yeah, and I'm wondering what my next project should be now.
Sounds exciting. Maybe come back and tell us a little bit later once you've got that. David, thanks very much, and have a great evening.
Thanks a lot.
Right, so this will be a familiar voice if you're used to listening to Cambridge 105. I'm now joined by Dom Smith. Dom, you're normally here in the pub of the month, guys, aren't you? But this time you're firmly in Internet of Things mode.
Yes, and Weekend Waffle. Don't forget the Weekend Waffle. But yes, I'm here as a Redgate employee and doing Internet of Things.
Now, when I was chatting to Marine a little bit earlier, we sort of said the stereotypical Internet of Things project that everyone always talks about is the Internet Fridge, and you've actually managed to come up with the Internet Fridge. What's your take on this?
So the normal Internet Fridge thing is a fridge that orders your shopping for you. I haven't done that. One of the problems we have at Redgate is that when we have big company meetings, they're held in a canteen where there is a big noisy commercial fridge in the background and it really disturbs and distracts people. So what I thought was it would be amazing if we could turn off that fridge automatically.
But hang on, surely all you do is you turn off the fridge at the start of the meeting and turn it back on at the end.
And it's the turning back on at the end bit that tends to get forgotten, and then, of course, all the food goes off.
Oh, that's no good. You have mouldy smoothies. Presumably you just have to look at when there's a meeting and then turn off the fridge. How do you even get a fridge to be internet controlled in the first place?
So you can get special plug sockets, basically, and the plug sockets can talk to the internet. So, or you can talk to them over the internet. So in this case, yes, essentially it was looking at a calendar for the room, finding out when the meeting was on, and then sending a command to the plug socket to cut the mains.
But I know you actually went a little bit further than that, because of course you don't want to turn the fridges off at lunchtime, and lunchtime is a meeting that you normally have in the canteen. What was the cool extra bit you went?
So one of the things is when we have these meetings, we use radio mics. And as some of the listeners may know, I'm also on the engineering team at Cambridge 105. So one of the things I thought is, well, we can play around with radio things a bit. And essentially, it's a system that monitors for the radio mic signal. And when the radio mic comes on, then it looks up the details in the diary to find out what the meeting is. And then it turns off the fridge.
And I have to say, I saw your demonstration of this. If you work in technology, you're probably familiar with the concept of the demo gods, and normally anything that works normally instantly fails as soon as you're demonstrating it in front of 100 people. I have to say, Dom, you must have been the luckiest man alive on that day, because it all just worked.
Yes, and there were lots of moving parts as well. I was even taking a screenshot from a webcam that's in the room and posting that to our internal forum at the same time, and everything worked. It was amazing.
Well, there you go. So that's the internet of fridges, webcams, meeting rooms, PA systems, radio mics, and whatever. Very, very nicely done, Dom. I think you might have got certainly the prize for the best demonstration of the week. Well, I think that's about all we've got time for from the Gadget Guide this week. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time. And if you want to get in touch, then do either follow us on Cambridge 105 on Twitter, Facebook, and so on. And if you missed this week's show or any of the previous weeks, as usual, they're up on the website as a podcast, or search for us on iTunes. Thanks very much, Tim, and have a good weekend.